While I was in Egypt at the climate summit, the head of the WHO says that climate change is a public health crisis. They've said that racism is a public health crisis. They've said that gun violence is a public health crisis. In other words, everything is a public health crisis. And if they get all authority over everything that they call a public health crisis and everything is a public health crisis, imagine the implications of that, right? I don't have to connect all the dots for you can see where this is going. Everything then falls under their jurisdiction.
Here at Liberty and Finance, we're licensed brokers with Miles Franklin. We are standing by the inventory, ready to make sure you get what you need, even into the wee hours of night and on weekends, because preparedness doesn't stop. Call us 1-888-81-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-815-4237.
Welcome back to Liberty and Finance. We're always glad to have this returning guest. Alex Newman is an international journalist. He's a contributor at Epoch Times. His stories have broken news on Fox News and other places as well. He joins us this Monday, March 13th, 2023. Thanks for coming back on Liberty and Finance, Alex.
Great to be here. Thank you, Dunning.
Well, you are a widely traveled and written journalist. You're all over the world covering things from, you came back from the Cairo United Nations Climate Summit. You go to the Red Pill Expo. You're part of, help organize that. You're reporting on all kinds of things wherever the forces of globalism and government overreach are trespassing on people's freedoms and privacy. And we'd like to dig into a few areas of encroachments on freedom and privacy right now with you. One of those areas of, I guess, abandonment of reason and basically trespass on parental sovereignty is in the area of education. You've worked extensively in that through your public school exit, et cetera. We'll talk more about that later. But first, if you could tell us about the latest developments coming out of the United Nations, a globalist body, in terms of what they call social and emotional learning and why that's coming soon to a school district near you and near us, and why parents need to be aware of that danger affecting their family.
Thank you, Dunnigan. It's great to be here. Sorry for being a little bit slower than usual. I just have been on an airplane all night and haven't had any sleep. I just got back from northern Idaho. So the new rage is called social-emotional learning, and I discovered a relatively obscure UN agency that's working on pushing this into schools all over the world. It's called, it's a subdivision of UNESCO, the UN Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. It's called the Mahatma Gandhi Institute of Education for Peace and Sustainable Development, or UNESCO MGIP, is how I call it. They actually are very bold on their website. They brag about how they're going to build kinder brains in children. They say they're going to transform minds and things like this. And as you dig into what they're doing, what you find very quickly is that socio-emotional learning and neuroscience are being used to mainstream and to push, first of all, radical left-wing political values. And secondly, very clearly defined spiritual goals. If you look at this institute, it's run by communists, actual communists, members of the Communist Party, in many cases, individuals who've served mass murdering dictatorships, population control fanatics, psychiatrists and neuroscientists, and then also pagans and one world spirituality people. And there are many, many of these all up and down. And in fact, the people who lead it are very much involved in this. One of the guys, he actually, until he passed away recently, served as the chairman. His name is Dr. Karan Singh. He's from India. And his claim to fame, other than having served as the leading population control minister during the Indira Gandhi regime, that's the regime that literally kidnapped millions of people, forcibly sterilized huge numbers of people, far more than the Nazis ever dreamed of sterilizing, by the way. So in addition to being in charge of that program in the Indian government, his other big claim to fame is this push for one world global spirituality, this one world new age religion. He was actually the co-chair of the World Commission on Global Consciousness and Spirituality. His other co-chair was Dr. Robert Mueller, the UN Assistant Secretary General, who actually wrote the UN World Core Curriculum that they want taught in every school on the planet, who, of course, was a disciple of the New Age occultist Alice Bailey, the founder of the Lucifer Publishing Company. So that's just, of course, the head of it. But there are many, many others that we could talk about who are also involved. And Dr. Karan Singh has just very openly stated his objectives many times. He says that religion, through its different representations, they want to make humanity aware that the final aim for all human beings is the path to enlightenment. He says that the significance of these global spirituality conferences is that we realize the essential unity of all religions. And, he's perfectly entitled to believe these things. But the question is, are they entitled to push these things on our children using highly advanced, highly sophisticated neuroscience, emotional and psychological manipulation through the public schools with our tax dollars? And I think the answer has to be obviously no. And so just a little bit more background on social emotional learning. It comes in disguised using very nice terminology. I mean, they don't tell the folks that, hey, this is to brainwash your kids to believe in a one world religion and to become basically communists. What they say is, we're going to make your kids empathetic. We're going to teach them how to manage their emotions. We're going to teach them compassion and tolerance and things. Every normal person wants their child to be compassionate, tolerant, empathetic. I mean, we all want these things for our children. But that's the catch, right? Their definition of empathy means you have to believe then in all these political goals like open borders or abortion or things like this. And so, they define the empathy as the goal, and then they've come up with the steps to get to the goal, and then you have to believe these certain things. And so what we're watching right now, and this is happening, it's not coming soon to a school district near you, Dunnigan. It is already in a school district near you. It's almost a certainty that your local school district already has a social emotional learning program that they've purchased, that they are now training or they have already started implementing in the school. And what it does, they're switching away from academics where, you have to know how to read, you have to know how to write. They all know that they're not going to do that, right? I mean, the federal government's data shows that less than 1/3 of children in government schools are proficient in reading, writing, math, anything. And so the new objectives now, rather than learn how to read or learn how to do algebra, now it's be empathetic, be tolerant, et cetera, these social and emotional goals. And so we're rapidly moving away from a focus on academics entirely and toward what they describe as the affective domain, different things having to do with your mindset, your values, your attitudes. And, I think even left-wing parents, even liberals, ought to be very concerned about this.
It reminds me so much of what we're seeing as basically a controlled demolition of almost every institution in our country that's like abdicating on its own core constituents. We've got the country itself, dropping borders. So then what is your country if you no longer have borders? It's like a cell without a cell wall. Or a country, companies that are all going, adopting ideologies regardless of the competence, whether it's firefighters, whether it's government, whether it's whatever. It's no longer college admission standards, no longer based on actual aptitude or competence, but based on certain identity groups. It seems that what is the world heading towards if we're no longer going to be able to think and reason and be effective at doing the things that are necessary to lead an orderly civilization?
Yeah, I think the people who are trying to orchestrate all of this have some very bizarre beliefs. In fact, I don't think so. I know so because I follow them. I watch their speeches. I read their books and their papers. We are watching the controlled demolition of our institutions. We're also watching the controlled demolition of the education system. Right? I mean, if you can even still call this thing an education system, I think that's really a stretch. There's really very little education happening in these so-called educational institutions. But we heard a slogan a lot over the last maybe 8 years or so. It originated with the United Nations, build back better. And so obviously, if you're going to build something back better, it implies that it was first destroyed. It implies that first something was broken down, because why would you need to build it back if it wasn't, broken down? So I think all of this is part of that. Right. Everything is being rebuilt, redesigned as part of this great reset, all of the institutions. And so one of the ones that I follow most closely, of course, is education. I believe it's one of the most important ones because it's the key to kind of make all the other things possible. But really, we're watching this in every sector. And Klaus Schwab told us this when he announced the Great Reset in the summer of 2020. He said everybody, every nation, every industry, every company is going to have to be transformed as part of this Great Reset. And they've been fairly open about what they believe for their Great Reset. And you brought up an interesting point. What they're doing here is going to prevent our children, future generations, from being able to think, from being able to reason, from having any historical context in which to put everything that's happening. And all of that that is by design. And you might think, well, that's going to be bad for them too, right? They're going to be ruling over a land of, you know, lemmings who can't think. But with the advances in computer technology that are happening right now, they've already determined, as Yuval Noah Harari, a leading advisor to Klaus Schwab, his work has been endorsed by Angela Merkel and the fascist who runs Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg and Barack Obama. I mean, all the globalists just worship at this guy's feet. They've already determined that they don't need the vast majority of us, right? They've got robots. They've got artificial intelligence. I mean, what do you need clear thinking young people for? You know, the AI can handle that. The robots can handle that. And so, you know, they actually have come to the conclusion that we're useless. And, you know, to the extent that they're going to let us stick around, he actually said in pretty plain English, we're going to keep them happy with drugs and video games. And frankly, for me, that's not acceptable. That's not acceptable for me or for my children or for the people I love. You know, we're not going to be kept as pets, kept happy with drugs and video games. That's preposterous.
Yeah, there's something that's innate. The innate dignity of the human person is created for a purpose and for a mission and for a goal by a higher power, and that we are not subject to, and nor should we be tolerant of subjugation by worldly masters. So for parents who reject and want to do a refuse these master plans that are being laid for our children and our grandchildren, you've outlined in the past specific steps people can take. You've talked about unplug from mass media. You've talked about exit the public schools. Can you reiterate for people what the best paths are that they can take to make a positive change right now that's urgently needed for their families?
Yeah, when it comes to dealing with social emotional learning, really your only option, first of all, is going to be to pull out of public schools. This is now ubiquitous in government schools all over the country and all over the world, increasingly, right? I mean, it's taking a little longer to arrive in like the jungles of the Amazon rainforest or, you know, the Congo. It probably won't be there next week, but it's coming. But in America, this is now ubiquitous. And I want to also warn parents, even a lot of Christian schools are starting to adopt SEL. And what's happening here, actually, I've dealt with this in a lot of Christian schools. I'm getting contacted by parents all over the country asking me, you know, what do we do? They're trying to bring this into my Christian school now. And so what they've done, there's one that I just dealt with last week. Fortunately, we were victorious here. The school ended up deciding not to implement the SEL curriculum, but it was by a company called Frenzy. FR, like friend ZY. And they claim to have a Christian SEL curriculum because they sprinkled a couple of Bible verses in totally out of context. It's really, really difficult to avoid this stuff now if you're going to remain in any kind of traditional educational model. And unfortunately, that's rapidly becoming true for Christian schools. So there are still a lot of Christian schools that are standing firm, but I would encourage parents, you know, don't just assume that because, it's a parochial school, a Catholic school or a Lutheran school or whatever, an evangelical school, that everything's going to be fine. You need to really vet these institutions. So I would say pull your kids out. And if you're not going to homeschool them, make sure that you're thoroughly vetting any private school or Christian school or whatever it is that you're sending them to. And by the way, charter schools are not safe. They're government schools. They're bound by all the government rules and regulations. They're funded by government. So charter schools should not be an option. And also, and the social media and the entertainment all kind of feeds into this, right? So I urge parents, really protect your children. And that doesn't mean be paranoid or that doesn't mean isolate them from the world. It means just be very selective with what you let them be exposed to. We don't allow Disney in our house anymore, for example. Disney has become wicked, filthy propaganda. And they're openly, they're bragging about how they're going to corrupt children. It's just sick. So parents, be very careful. And also social media. It's in many ways, I think it's feeding the crisis that we're seeing in our schools. The CDC just, and I know the CDC is not a credible source of information, but they do this survey, the Youth Risk Behavior Survey. And what they found is that almost 60% of our young girls are now feeling persistent feelings of sadness and hopelessness. One in three seriously considered suicide in 2021, the latest year for which they have data. And a big part of that is what's happening in the public schools, but also a big part of that is, you know, they're scrolling through these stupid social media things where the algorithm is feeding them stuff that they probably shouldn't be seeing, that's leading them down rabbit holes they shouldn't be going to, where they're just looking at all these girls, you know, posting their beautiful selves in bikinis. I mean, you don't need to be doing that. Just put the thing away. I don't even think kids necessarily need smartphones. And a lot of parents get mad at me. I don't know that kids need smartphones. So those are some things that I would recommend for protecting one's family, one's children. And also on the macro level, you know, we can't just ignore what's happening in society at large. We need to be really getting involved in these things, getting involved in political elections. If you can't run for office, find somebody to support. If you can't support them by knocking doors, write them a check. If you can't write them a check, go support them by knocking doors. Having good people in elected office, even down to the mayor, county commission, city commission, your state representative, it's going to make a huge difference in what it's like in your little area of the world. As things continue to get weirder and weirder with the economic issues we're facing, with the controlled demolition of our institutions, et cetera, you know, you really want to make sure you've got good people in authority, especially the ones closest to you, your city, your county, and your state.
And good people, including meaning that they have a track record of upholding and protecting the individual liberties of individuals and of families, and protecting the family as the viable, the most important institution within society, from building a healthy society, and in which the parents have the natural right to be the primary educators of their children. So you mentioned a public school exit. Can you tell people how to find out about that?
Yeah, so publicschoolexit.com is the website. It's a nonprofit ministry we started a few years ago. I'm executive director, but I don't take a salary. It's a volunteer thing for me. I'm passionate about trying to get kids out of public schools. So if you go there, we will help you in whatever way you need to get your children out of public schools. We'll help churches. We're helping churches all over the world deal with these issues. You know, whether they want to set up a Christian school, whether they want to set up a co-op, whether they want to set up a micro school, an online academy, a hybrid of private school, homeschool, or even, you know, for smaller churches that maybe can't make that kind of commitment, even just helping set up a scholarship fund where members of your congregation can contribute so that the lower income folks, the single moms, the ones that are really struggling, still have the ability to pull their children out. We don't think that there's any reason for any child to still be trapped in a public school building. In fact, as far as I'm concerned, the building's on fire, folks. It's cruel and unusual for us to even consider leaving children there, whether you're poor, whether it doesn't matter, you've got to get them out of there. And so that's our objective there. People can find it at publicschoolexit.com. We do have a lot of resources to help parents understand what's going on and then sound the alarm, right? It's not enough to just pull your children out. We got to sound the alarm, wake the town, let people know. That's why I'm so tired right now. I just flew in from Idaho last night. I preached all four morning services at the biggest church in that area. And that's what I told people. You've got to get your children out. You know, they're being destroyed physically, morally, mentally, physically, emotionally, in every possible way. It's such a critical issue. And if they get the children, you know, totalitarians have always understood this. If they get the children, they've got the future locked down, and we cannot allow that.
Another area of your work is in helping countries to recognize and resist the temptation to go along with these globalist pressures that are subverting national sovereignty at that level. And the World Health Organization and other, the World Economic Forum, et cetera, you've talked to us in the past about how they're passing these goals and guidelines for the world, and that even in our country here, there are pressures within the current administration to sign up for that, basically saying, well, whatever the World Health Organization says in the future is going to be prevail in our country. And there's this pass the buck, but it completely is unconstitutional in the sense that the whole purpose of government as established by the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution is to protect the freedoms, the God-given rights of the people. Can you talk to us about what is coming down the pipe from the World Health Organization in terms of this abrogation of national sovereignty worldwide?
Yeah, this has been on the agenda for a very long time. And what we've seen is a gradual accumulation of more and more power. And this is happening on all these global institutions, right? We focused on UNESCO, which is the UN's education agency. But the same thing is happening in the health sphere. The World Health Organization now has two different attacks that they are using. By the way, with full collaboration from the Biden administration, from the communist Chinese dictatorship, the most murderous regime in human history. And I actually sounded the alarm about this. I did a front page above the cover article in the Epoch Times, I think May of last year, warning people what the World Health Organization was up to. They were pursuing amendments to the international health regulations. The international health regulations kind of govern the outfit's response to pandemics and things like that. And then they were pursuing another attack through the negotiation of an international pandemic treaty. Well, the chickens are now coming home to roost. They're pushing full force on those. And I hope people understand the seriousness of this, right? The zero draft that they've released of the International Pandemic Treaty grants unbelievable powers to the World Health Organization. Under the guise of equity, they would be able to seize our medical supplies, our medicines, our medical countermeasures to redistribute them to other nations under the guise of equity. They would be able to basically control the pandemic response of not just nations, but even states and local governments. And all this is, you know, purports to be authorized in this pandemic treaty. I think people need to realize this, too. It's not just about healthcare. Right. And just about healthcare was bad enough. We saw what happened over the last 3 years where under the guise of health, every kind of regulation stripping our freedom. And a lot of these things were unprecedented. We had never seen anything like that. The head of YouTube, and I know we can't talk too deeply about all the details because the AI and the fascists will be upset. But the head of YouTube at the time, the CEO, Susan Wojcicki, said anything that contradicts the World Health Organization's recommendations is going to be taken down. And they were dead serious. They took down tons of my videos interviewing world-class doctors and scientists who were saying something different than what the World Health Organization was doing. So if they were doing that without the International Pandemic Treaty in place, imagine what they would do with that in place. So it's very, very dangerous what they're talking about here. They're talking about handing all authority to the WHO. And then you add to that, that even just in recent years, the heads of the WHO, this guy, Tedros Ghebreyesus, who used to be a Politburo member on an ethno-Marxist terrorist organization, the Tigray People's Liberation Front, and before him, the Communist Chinese operative Margaret Chan, they both frequently described all kinds of things as public health crises. While I was in Egypt at the climate summit, the head of the WHO says that climate change is a public health crisis. They've said that racism is a public health crisis. They've said that gun violence is a public health crisis. In other words, everything is a public health crisis. And if they get all authority over everything that they call a public health crisis and everything is a public health crisis, imagine the implications of that, right? I don't have to connect all the dots for you can see where this is going. Everything then falls under their jurisdiction. And even without these things in place, again, we watched them quarantine entire nations. We watched the coordinated global policy response where governments all over the world implemented policies that prior to a few years ago would have been absolutely unthinkable even at a national level, much less at a global level. So it's a grave danger, but there is good news. You mentioned our Constitution. Thankfully, that is still in place. Thankfully, every politician in America swears an oath on a Bible, typically, to uphold and defend that Constitution. That Constitution is described within that Constitution as the supreme law of the land, along with any statutes or treaties that are passed in pursuance thereof. And there's a very particular meaning to that. That means that are constitutional. So this is, on its face, totally unconstitutional, Dunnigan. The federal government does not have these powers, right? If you want to read the powers of the federal government, most of them are outlined in Article 1, Section 8. Those are the legislative powers of Congress. All legislative powers are reserved for Congress. And so that's pretty much the extent of what the federal government can do. If the federal government can't do something, it certainly cannot delegate that task to an international agency, right? And that's self-evident. Thomas Jefferson pointed out that the treaty power was not unlimited. Obviously, the treaties have to be constitutional. And the Supreme Court pointed this out in 1957, Reed versus Covert. They said the federal government cannot grant itself new powers beyond those allowed in the Constitution simply by signing and ratifying a treaty. So even if hypothetically this abomination were to get through, and it looks like Biden is going to try to call it an accord and say that it doesn't need to be ratified by the Senate. Of course, all treaties need to be ratified by two-thirds of senators, otherwise they're not valid. But even if, and I think it's a big if because I think this is dead on arrival in the Senate. But even if it were to be ratified by the Senate, it's still patently unconstitutional. And one more wonderful protection that we have here in America, thanks to the brilliance and the wisdom of our founding fathers, is the distribution of power, not just horizontally through the different branches, executive, legislative, and judicial, but also vertically. And so, you know, the federal government doesn't have that. It doesn't have like an army to enforce all of this stuff. They really depend on hijacking state and local governments. And they do a lot of that by bribing our state and local governments to kind of do what they say if they want a 10% boost to their budget with federal funds. But states and local governments and counties must absolutely say, you know, that's an illegitimate agreement. We are not going to enforce it. And I've talked to legislators all over the country about this. I've got commitments from a lot of them to pass bills working on this. All it would take is a very simple bill. The World Health Organization has usurped powers with help from Biden that are illegitimate and unconstitutional. No employee or agency or resource of the state or any subdivision thereof may be used to enforce or help enforce any directive coming from the World Health Organization. So even if somehow this abomination were found to be constitutional, which it's not, even constitutional things, this was settled in the case involving Sheriff Richard Mack, Prince versus United States. Even for things that are supposedly constitutional, the federal government cannot hijack, cannot usurp. In fact, the term that they use in the ruling was commandeer state and local government resources. So we've got multiple layers of protection. I know a lot of people out there are saying, like, you know, Chicken Little, the sky is falling. We're all doomed if this WHO thing goes through. It's serious. It's a big threat. I don't want to downplay it. But I also want people to understand we've got multiple layers of protection. We've got multiple things that we can be doing to stop this. So it's not all over if this gets through. It just changes the battle a little bit and the fight goes on.
Along the way, you mentioned how this has got to be connected to that intentional unlearning that's happening, making sure that our next generation of students don't know how to use logic and reason. But you helped those of us who still were taught logic and reason to understand that if all potential crises of any flavor or stripe can be labeled as health crises, and then all health crises can then use these extreme, extraordinary, and unconstitutional power agreements, then therefore any time that anything that can happen can be used as a blanket. So we basically have had our rights stripped away from us completely. One of the things you mentioned along the way there is climate science and the catastrophism around climate change has been used as a description for why we need to have all kinds of restrictions on our lifestyles, on our free choices as people making plans to run our lives in the way that we see fit. Can you talk to us about the latest exposés you've been involved in debunking some of these, the climate catastrophism and the climate science initiatives that are being used as an excuse, as the cover story to strip away our rights and freedoms and futures?
Well, thank you, Danny. Yeah, the pseudoscience underpinning this hysteria has never been more discredited than it is today. Just a couple of weeks ago, I was actually at the Heartland Institute's 15th annual climate summit, and they're bringing together some of the most respected, some of the most highly credentialed scientists on the planet to debunk these things. And people can go find my interviews. A lot of them are posted up at thenewamerican.com. Some are still going up, so not all of them are up. But I interviewed Dr. Willie Soon, probably the world's leading astrophysicist. He actually worked most of his career with Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics. So one of the top leaders in his field. And he said, you know, the climate hustlers are lying to you. He actually goes through showing the data that they're using is highly manipulated. And his studies on this, he's done many peer-reviewed studies on this. They've been cited by the UN's top IPCC scientists on these exact issues. You know, one of the things that he talks about is the urban heat island effect. So they're taking all these temperature stations from around the world that used to be out in a field that are now completely surrounded by buildings and concrete. And they're saying, oh, there's been a 2-degree increase. That's because there's a city that was built up around your temperature station, silly. And so the UN knows this. Dr. Willie Soon has done numerous peer-reviewed papers on this issue. And the UN knows all about them because they've cited them. So I encourage people to watch that. I interviewed Dr. William Happer, physics professor at Princeton University. He was, of course, Donald Trump's climate advisor. And people should go watch that. He says CO2 is good for the planet. We should be celebrating CO2. He says we should be encouraging people to release more CO2. He and I both spoke at a climate conference a few years ago. And I'll never forget some of the things that he told me on camera and that he also said while he was speaking up on stage. You know, he said that plants are designed to live in an atmosphere with 4 to 5 times as much CO2 as we currently have. Anybody who tells you that it's a little bit more human CO2 in the atmosphere is going to hurt the planet is simply doesn't know what they're talking about. And so I asked them, what's the motivation of these people? Why are they then telling us that CO2 is toxic pollution, but that if we pay taxes to the UN, somehow we'll achieve this magical global temperature that everybody will be happy with? And he says it's because they're totalitarians. And I said, well, you know, what happens if they win? He says, well, you know, we have Cambodia. Hopefully it won't get that bad, he said, but you can look at the Soviet Union. And so, you know, that's what we're dealing with here. He said, we're dealing here with people who are totalitarians. I interviewed Dr. Richard Lindzen, from MIT, right? One of the world's leading meteorologists. He spent decades teaching meteorology. He worked with all the big government agencies. In fact, he was one of the lead reviewers on the UN IPCC report that won that Nobel Prize that they shared with Al Gore the clown, or Saint Al Gore the climate guru, depending on your perspective. And he actually, again, talks about these people don't understand how the climate works. This agenda that they have to waste trillions of dollars restructuring the global economy and the energy systems, he says it will hurt billions of people. It's immoral. And so this is what actual legitimate scientists who've been in this field for decades, in some cases for generations, are saying. And yet the fake media wants you to think that they don't even exist. Right. There's all scientists agree. Totally preposterous. I hope people go watch that. And also for the folks out there who aren't interested in the science, who don't think they can comprehend it. I did just do a couple months ago a big piece in the Epoch Times. People can read this. It's called CCP Proves Climate Fight is Not Really About Climate. And so I prove without any science whatsoever that the people at the top of this climate cult, as Richard Lindzen calls them, the MIT meteorologist, that the people at the top of this cult do not even believe this narrative themselves. If they did believe it, they'd be doing the opposite of what they're doing, right? Which is right now what they're doing is they're shutting down industry across the Western world in the United States. They're shutting down our energy infrastructure, which is causing our manufacturing to be shipped over to China. Well, every unit of economic production that takes place in communist China releases vastly more CO2 than that same unit of economic production would release being produced here in the United States. And so I was at the UN climate conference in Paris, where they came up with the Paris Agreement. Obama said, we're going to slash American CO2 emissions by almost a third by the year 2025. And all the lemmings in the journalism section applauded. I call it the cheerleading section. And then the communist Chinese say, well, we're going to keep increasing our CO2 until 2030, maybe. And all the lemmings keep applauding, right? This is absolutely bonkers. And if you truly believe that carbon dioxide is dangerous, that it's bad for the planet, the worst possible thing you could do is ship all of our industry to China. And yet that's exactly what they're doing. They're spitting in your face and they're telling you that it's raining.
That's one of the common themes among everything we've just talked about over the last half hour here, is that the topic is never the issue. The stated goal makes no sense. It's illogical. It all breaks down if you actually confront it straight on, if you look at it straight on. In other words, the lockdowns and the extreme measures and the so-called masking and the so-called forced experimental treatments that were neither safe nor effective and everything, none of that had to do with public health, because doctors who were actually on the front lines working for public health said, hey, there's repurposable drugs, there's low-cost things, there's measures, nutritional measures that people should be taking. Everybody should have access to vitamin C, vitamin D, all these things that they would improve their health. And that was absolutely squashed and kiboshed. So it's never been about public health. And now here, it's about climate. It's about making sure we have a healthy planet. But no. Anything that, you know, pushing production over to China and shutting down, basically dragging down the living standard of the developed world while letting that rise up in multiples of the effect that they supposedly are trying to squash. So it's never been really about the climate, never been about the health. Now we have this equity financially that companies are having to try to jump through hoops to try to prove that they're doing the right thing. And what's happening is the competence, the effectiveness, the ability of companies to actually function is just dropping, just plummeting. What's the goal here? What's the big picture? If what we're being told, in other words, weaponizing our own empathy against ourselves, now explicitly taking over our children to have them think that these are the virtuous things to do. So yes, we all have in our hearts the desire for virtue and the desire for fairness and that sort of thing. But that's being played on. We're being played like a player piano. And what is the actual goal? It sounds like you're saying is totalitarianism.
That is the actual goal. And I think it's very easy to demonstrate that empirically. You actually almost said a catchphrase of the revolutionists back in the 1960s. And I don't know if that was deliberate or not, but back in the 1960s, the Students for a Democratic Society, that was kind of the above ground wing of a communist terrorist movement in our country, connected to the Weather Underground. Bill Ayers, of course, he's the one who launched Barack Obama's political career. They were bombing the Capitol back when apparently bombing the Capitol wasn't a big deal. They bombed the State Department. They bombed the Pentagon. They murdered police officers. They bombed the funerals of police officers. But so the above ground, the kind of legal wing of this communist movement in our country, was called Students for a Democratic Society. And they had a slogan. for at least the upper level people, maybe not so much the useful idiots, but it was the issue is never the issue. The issue is always the revolution. And so you have all these conservatives that still haven't gotten this, right? They say, oh, we got to battle on all these issues. The issue is climate change. We got to show them that climate change is not really happening or not really caused by human activity or not really that bad. Or the issue is racism. We got to show them that we're not really racist. That it's, we're not really a white supremacist society. Or the issue is empathy. We got to show them that we're really empathetic or that this isn't the best way to achieve empathy. And what I say to conservatives is you're kind of missing the point, right? They know these things aren't issues. You're not going to persuade them that CO2 is not dangerous. You're not going to persuade them that we don't need diversity, equity, and inclusion to make our companies function properly. They know that, right? The issue is not the issue. The issue is the revolution. And that's the case across all of you. The issue is not health. The issue is not climate change. The issue is not racism. The issue is not gun violence. The issue is always the revolution. So they have a number of different marketing slogans they've used over the years. They've really started coming out of the closet much more on their ultimate objectives. They call it the Great Reset. Before that, they called it the New World Order. They have the Green New Deal, the Build Back Better, right? Really, what we're talking about here is if you just use simple terminology and avoid their carefully targeted and tested, focus group slogans like New World Order, they're talking about a global system of totalitarian control. And they actually have been pretty open about this, right? We've heard multiple U.S. presidents talk about the New World Order and define it for us. George H.W. Bush back in the early 1990s said that the New World Order, we'd have a credible United Nations. He talked about we'd have the global rule of law governing the conduct of whole nations, right? Global legal system. He talked about how we'd use the UN's peacekeeping role, by which he means the UN's military forces, the goobers, the child rapists with the blue helmets. They've raped probably 60,000 women and children over the last 10 years, according to high-level UN people who've just used the UN's own data to come up with these numbers. They're monsters, right? I mean, not all of them, obviously, but it's basically an army of monsters. And we said we're going to use this peacekeeping role to implement the vision of the UN's founders. And we know what the vision of the UN's founders was, right? Stalin sent his foreign minister, Mr. Molotov, all mass murdering monsters. And then we sent Alger Hiss to represent us out of the State Department. And then we prosecuted him some years later because he was working for Joseph Stalin. Why in the world would we want to implement the vision of these mass murdering maniacs? It's simply crazy. And yet they've admitted to us on national television that that's what they want. You can listen to Klaus Schwab talk about the Great Reset. You can, and he brought in the head of the United Abominations, the head of the UN, Antonio Guterres, who used to run the Socialist International, the largest alliance of socialist and communist parties in the world. That was his job before he became the head of the UN. So you take all this together and the evidence is crystal clear. They want a one world totalitarian system with them in charge, and they want to demolish every institution that protects us from them, whether that be our private companies, whether that be our national sovereignty, our governments, our state sovereignty, our individual rights, our protections. They want all of that gone. And I think ultimately, you can't really understand this without looking at the metaphysical part of it. I think a lot of people are still under the impression that these are just bad guys with bad ideas, and that if we just persuade people that the ideas are bad, if we just have a debate and in the marketplace of ideas, everything's going to be fine. What we're dealing with here is just pure evil. And, when you're dealing with pure evil rather than just a person with good intentions but bad ideas, you have to take a different approach in that battle. You have to protect your family in a whole different way. You have to protect your community in a whole different way. And ultimately, I think it's going to come down to it's them or it's us. I mean, either our freedoms and our liberties are going to be protected and preserved, and these people are going to be stopped, or we're going to lose our freedoms, we're going to lose our country, we're going to lose our churches, we're going to lose our families, and these maniacs are going to succeed. Those are the two options. And so I think with that in mind, we need to craft strategies for protecting our rights, protecting our nation, protecting our Constitution, because we are in danger of losing them all.
Alex, your writings are always on point. Where can people follow your work?
My personal website is libertysentinel.org. I put up a lot of the stuff there. And then I'm senior editor at the New American Magazine. People can get that at thenewamerican.com. Every 2 weeks, we put out a print issue, and that gets mailed to subscribers across the country. And then my work appears in a lot of other places, too. You mentioned the Epoch Times, Public School Exit. I write for a lot of different clients, Law Enforcement Intelligence Brief, which goes out to every police chief and sheriff in the whole country. There's a lot of different places that my work appears, but my personal page is libertysentinel.org. People can find me on the social media companies, Twitter, Fascist Book, although I don't use that much, Truth Social, Getter, Gab, Rumble, all those things. My channel on Rumble is Liberty Sentinel. And then I do a daily TV show. It starts on Lindell TV, Frank Speech, and then gets picked up by a bunch of other networks, Brighteon and things like that. And that people can watch live every day on Lindell 2. From 4:30 to 5 Eastern.
And folks, so that you don't miss a single interview with Alex or any of our other guests, make sure that you sign up for our all-free newsletter at libertyandfinance.com. Just go to libertyandfinance.com, enter your name, your email address, click submit. You'll get one confirming email. Once you opt in, you're in. You'll get one email per day in your inbox with our latest interviews and our weekly specials. We're always grateful for your presence here. Alex, thanks for joining us again on Liberty and Finance.
Thank you so much, Dunnigan. Always a pleasure and an honor to be here.
Miles Franklin Precious Metals is one of America's oldest and most trusted bullion dealers. Miles Franklin is A-plus rated and accredited by the Better Business Bureau, licensed and bonded, and has zero complaints ever registered. Here at Liberty and Finance, we are licensed brokers with Miles Franklin. To order, simply call us, discuss your needs, and we can let you know our live inventory, prices, and availability, and lock in your order over the phone. Once your order is locked, the price is held for you regardless of market fluctuations, and the metals are reserved for you awaiting your settled payment. Within one business day of ordering, you will receive an email invoice detailing the order and payment instructions. Miles Franklin accepts payments by bank wire, ACH or electronic check, money order, check mailed priority mail, and cryptocurrency. The fastest forms of payment are bank wire and cryptocurrency. Upon settled payment, metals will ship out within 3 to 5 business days. You will receive tracking information via email. Domestic shipping charges are $15 for any order under 500 ounces of silver or 10 ounces of gold. For orders larger than that, domestic shipping is free. The package will be boxed, fully insured, and labeled discreetly, with no indication of the contents inside. For your privacy, the name Miles Franklin will not even be on the package. To talk to myself, Kaiser, my brother Elijah, or my father Dunnigan, call 1-888-81-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-815-4237.